coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hushkin's Comics from two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent. Your hosts, Andrew Barber and the Jedi Cold Kid. And now it's time for Hushkin's Comics.
I don't know if the Russians roll their R's like that.
The
but...
Premier is a man of the people, but he is also a man, if you take my meaning.
Okay. This is Hey Kids Comics. This is issue...
This is Hey Comrades Comics.
Hey Comrades Comics. This is issue 199. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Yes,
You're gonna... Cole...
Comrade Cole Houston.
Comrade Cole Houston.
Houston Norm.
Houston Chinko.
It's like one of those things where, you know, if you're pressed for characters, you put Ov at the end of their name and they're Russian. You put, you just put some certain suffix in and suddenly they're...
Whatever distinctive
culture you want to try to...
Somewhere Del Close is rolling around in his grave. His improv, the ghost of all good improv is like, no. So this is issue 199. What is the title of this issue, Comrade Cole?
This is Red All Over.
This is one of Cole's brain children. It actually ends up quite
in
brilliant.
In Russia, a paint store, I have only one color, red.
What are we talking about tonight, Comrade?
Tonight we are talking about Russia, Russian comics, the Cold War, and the effect of the actual Cold War on comics, the Cold War as depicted in comics, and our good and our red friends from the other side of the world who would often invade our come and threaten our way of life with their various Ruski ways.
Yeah, and you know, we so harken back to the days, if you will, go on a journey with me to the days of my favorite movie, and that kind of span of time. Now this branches out way beyond earlier and later for that matter. But if you want to head back to a headier day when Charlie Sheen and Patrick Swayze left their Michigan town to go hide in the woods with Kalashnikovs and a Ford Bronco. my Thanksgiving treat, other than cranberry sauce, Red Dawn, is the first thing that comes to mind here. And that's what, when you look at when these comics were coming out, that was, and not to get all you damn kids, you know, get off my lawn and crack a book or anything, but I think it's hard to explain to the earlier generations what that was like, because it was real.
Yes, absolutely. But what you see is this sort of escalation from the 50s McCarthyism, which influenced comics very heavily in many ways. McCarthyism led to, I don't think that Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent would have had the teeth it had. But for the communist witch hunts, it made witch hunts the flavor of the month, as it were.
It's always got to come back around. You got to get witch hunts every about 200 years, or you're not doing your job right as a society.
That's right, and that that sort of state of fear that's an important bit of governance, and you know the fear of the rise of the international communist conspiracy was huge. And then as you move into the 60s and 70s with the advent of the Cold War, by the 80s, when the Cold War had frozen solid.
Right.
And it was just the inertia was palpable. And there's a whole generation that didn't know what it was like to actually – where that was such a – things like mutually assured nuclear destruction was such a certainty.
Yeah.
That it was just a matter of when.
Well, I heard a I heard an interview, and it was like on NPR or something, where they were talking to one of the people that was involved in the Bay of Pigs, inside the rooms, inside the rooms, inside the rooms. You know, like deep in the heart of the war room, like the Dr. Strangelove war room, the war room within the war room within the war room.
You don't see the big board.
And talking about how surreal it was, because in that room, it was It was 1 minute to midnight. It was done. It was over. The bombs were launched. They might as well have already been launched. They were all.
Martin Sheen says the missiles are flying.
And you weren't allowed. They were witnessing phone calls being made to family, and you weren't allowed to say we're all going to die.
Yes.
So it was very. They said it was very surreal because you had these very high up government officials calling their families, just talking about their day when they were absolutely 110% sure the world was going to end within like 24 hours.
Oh yes, in fact, it's uncanny to realize how close to the world ending the Cuban Missile Crisis. For example, there was a Russian submarine between Cuba and Florida.
Right, right.
That was forced to dive because of depth charges from American vessels. The crew were out of radio contact and were certain that war had to have broken out.
Right.
And there were three officers aboard, the captain, the first officer, and the political officer, which was required, just like in Hunt for Red October, on board. Two out of, or all three of those officers had to be in agreement to fire a nuclear torpedo.
Right.
And the political officer and the captain were ready to push the big button. And the... first officer convinced them, let's surface and at least make certain.
Right.
And boy, were their faces red.
Damn it, Cole. But you know what comic books do brilliantly, and in the 200 issues of Hey Kids Comics, we've shown this time and time again, is they do two things. Number one, they latch on to the jingoistic ideas of the American ideal. Very, very quickly and run with it. And then number two is in complete dichotomy to that, they shine a light on the kind of ridiculousness of, you know, through good sci-fi, through good writing, sometimes bad writing, whatever, but they shine a light on how crazy the world is and how nuts we are being and how to make the world a better place. That's what comics do. They do those two things at the same time somehow, and usually Frank Miller's involved. But and also Watchmen, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point today, because I think it ties directly back into this.
Oh, absolutely. You have to Watchmen does a brilliant job of kind of being a period piece, almost being like a period movie, only it's a comic book, and capturing that feel. If you want to know kind of what it felt like, pay very close attention to the U.S.-Soviet tensions as explored there, because that is really a lot of what it was like back then. I remember even, I was in college in the early 80s, and there was like the little college rag that would, the little ad rag that would be published nationally. And there was an article about some guy making this trip to Russia, and he was just convinced that, he was going to come out of there hating those evil snow devils, and wound up returning to write this article with a tremendous amount of respect for the Russian people.
Right.
Because it wasn't all that pop culture and government fear mongering had played it up to be, when he got to go and, walk in Red Square and see the Kremlin and everything. And but it was also that same period where there was always just this underlying certainty that any minute, almost everything you saw in the made-for-TV movie the day after,
that
wasn't
movie.
Patently ridiculous, was going to have. Oh, actually, okay, but at least some of that could potentially happen, even though most of it was patently ridiculous.
Well, and like I said, you had Red Dawn. You had every movie, every TV show, every comic book.
A movie called Born American. I remember the tagline on the movie poster was, his only crime was he was born American. Because that's how bad those Ruskies were. They just wanted to get their hands on some American nationals traveling abroad so that they could make examples of them or something. Who knows?
Professional wrestling. Every Nikolai Volkov, the Iron Sheik, like every bad guy out there had to be a dirty commie. But you know what? We can look back now and laugh at a lot of this stuff. But at the time, it was definitely kind of the fodder, the pin of bad guys that you could pull from. They were all dirty commies. They were all pinko red commies.
When you had everything from characters like from the Champions, the Commissar, who was hailed as the man that created the Black Widow.
Right.
To, who were like, they weren't really like super villains. They were just villains who were, bloody communists.
Well, what was funny to me was at the time you had a lot of, so you have Hydra, right? And Hydra before this, sort of, were German.
Yeah.
Because the Germans were the bad guys.
Well, it was born out of German Nazism.
Right. Right. It was born out of the Thule Society and German Nazism, and yeah.
But they roll with the punches.
Right? When the time comes to change, Hydra just morphs into a Russian organization.
Yeah, all of a sudden they're like, hey, I know that your people and our people had their differences, but the one thing we had in common is we want to take over the world by force.
Caesar is dead. All hail Caesar.
Yeah, exactly. All hail Comrade Caesar.
But one thing that comic books did, and they did it sometimes in a tongue-in-cheek fashion and sometimes with an eye on kind of the serious, took those dirty commies to task.
I mean, everything about the Cold War and the tensions between the U.S. and its former ally was open. There was open season on that, right down to the space race, because you could argue that the space race gave birth to the Fantastic Four.
Right.
Because the idea of manned space flight was reduced to such a milk run that, as we talked about in a recent team up episode, you could just have the family and friends plan the next time you were doing an experimental rocket flight. So what do you do on the other side of the coin? And that is have the Russians experimental rocket flight, where they just get a crazy old coot and send him up with three non-indigenous primates.
They
gutted the collection to the Moscow Zoo. Sorry, kids, no monkeys today. They go to space.
You mean Khan as portrayed by Bill Pullman, the Red Ghost, right? Like, that's
Khan as portrayed by Bill Pullman, indeed. Yes, the Red Ghost.
The damn Red Ghost. Like, just.
And of course, he couldn't have just come back as the Ghost.
No, it had to be the Red Ghost. He was Russian.
Yeah, because you have to play that Russian aspect up.
And I love the fact that essentially it was the opposite of the like you have the Fantastic Four, but instead of like in Superman, where your Fantastic Four and your analogous Fantastic Four was who became the last Krypton, the Eradicator. You had the nuclear family, where it was like the Reed, what was the name of it? We always reference this and I always forget it. The guy with the pipe, in his cult. The cult of, I can't remember.
Oh, Bob Dobbs.
Yeah. It was a very Bob Dobbsian, like nuclear, nuclear family.
Oh, yes, very, very Church of Subgenius kind of family there.
Yeah, but when it comes to Marvel and Stan Lee.
So basically what you're saying is the Fantastic Four have slack?
Yes. But then
Ivan Stang would be proud of you.
But on the other side, you've got Stan Lee like, okay, what is my natural opposite of the Fantastic Four? Oh, yeah, a crazy, I'm going to do Khan, and then I'm going to have three monkeys.
Yeah.
Like that's what the Russians can pull off is the monkeys. You know who doesn't get enough credit?
It's like a quarter scale 12 Army of the 12 Monkeys.
You know who doesn't get enough credit as a Russian as a communist hero is Cosmo the space dog.
That is so true. Cosmo's a later addition, or is Cosmo older than I realize?
That we need to research. I don't know. He was such a B a B character that I don't know the answer to that.
And the thing about it is the modern incarnation of the Guardians of the Galaxy does a brilliant job of pulling together characters that were never meant to be together, that came from all different eras in Marvel history.
Right.
And now that you mention it, you know, Cosmo might have been around longer than I realized, or he may have been a product of that more modern story of the Guardians.
And for me, you know, I love, and we were talking about this right before the show started, and Cole did. I have to be upfront and say this. I usually do a bunch of research. I was busy all week on business. Cole pulled together the most amazing research for this issue of Hey Kids Comics. He needs to be applauded for that. But he found one that I was hoping he would find for this, which is there was an issue of X-Men back in the day where Claremont introduced us to Arcade.
Yes, indeed.
And go ahead.
Oddly enough, this was a character that did not occur to me first, because my initial go-to always when I'm thinking of the Great Red Nation is the Soviet super soldiers.
Which are great, by the way, which are fantastic.
And we will definitely be touching on them, but it did, in researching this, I remembered one of the earliest X-Men I had was that great first appearance of Arcade in the pages of X-Men, and then what I considered at the time one of the single most disappointing turns of events and the worst costume ever, so I thought.
But see, the thing is, it was the worst costume ever, but now I look at it, I think it's probably one of the best costumes ever. Like, in retrospect, and of course we're talking about when Arcade, through one of his many, labyrinthian death traps, brainwashed Colossus and made him into the Proletarian. God, so good. If you guys haven't read this, it's his costume. So it's Colossus in all of his steel fury, but he's got the engineers, like the Russian engineers cap, and a pair of red overalls. And what's on the red overalls, Cole?
You have this wonderful, first at the top, nearer, you know, flanked by the buttons of the straps, you have the inevitable CCCP.
Yes.
Or 3CP, as they would say on the 3CP1 Russian television episode of SCTV.
On 3CP.
3CP1, the Russian television. And that is in a semicircle above a stylized hammer and sickle.
Oh, it's so good.
The blade of the sickle encompassing a portrait of none other than Soviet hero and face man, Pyotr Ilyich Ulyanov, better known as Lenin.
It's so good. And we were talking before the show.
And presumably the namesake of Pyotr Rasputin himself.
Yes, exactly. And we were talking before the show that if anybody out there is listening and they want to blow people's minds out of their heads at any convention they go to, you want to prove to me that you are not just somebody who's going to go to Hot Topic and buy a Deadpool or a Harley Quinn costume and wear it to a convention and say you're a cosplayer. You want to be a true life cosplayer, dress up as the Proletarian. Put the time and effort in to make that your costume. I will buy it.
You know what's ironic, though, is I've seen people go all in with Red Skull, right down to full authentic Nazi regalia, right down to the armband.
Right.
And wander around conventions with impunity. Even this far after the Cold War thawed, I would be worried about the safety of anyone showing up dressed in filthy commie attire.
You know who would love it? Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders would love it.
Comic book Bernie Sanders would love this because we won the Cold War.
But socialism...
It's okay now. Let the boy dress up as a proletarian. We have nothing to fear.
We bridge the gap between America and the Eastern Bloc.
Most frightening thing coming out of Russia now is shirtless pictures of...
Why is it... Speaking of... I don't know why I know why we can't do it now. It's going to be about 10 years down the road. But why can't we use Vladimir Putin as a... Because He is absolutely a comic book villain. He is made to be a comic book villain.
He is the living embodiment of a comic book villain and or a Bond villain.
Yeah, I mean, I could fully
see...
He's
like the Russian Scaramanga.
Well, I could see... In my mind, I could see Jack Reacher punching him in the face. That has absolutely some... Or I could see, it wouldn't even be... It wouldn't even be Captain America. It would be like...
It would be like what is it that's coming out? The Champions? Or
yeah, they'd be like...
You know, the new incarnation of the Champions.
Right.
Fight Putin, man.
Putin in a stolen Stark suit that he made.
It's known as Putin Nanny.
Boo! I wish I had one of those hip-hop air horns. Wait a second.
Putin Nanny has one built right into the armor.
Wait a second, okay? Okay, hold on. Say that again.
Putin Nanny.
Oh, it's it. Oh, damn it. Hold on. God, I'm trying. Keep going. I'm going to get this to work.
So, yeah, absolutely. But the thing about it is you would have your Russian...
Okay, say it again.
Okay, Putin Nanny.
Oh, hold on. I can get it.
We'll take this.
All right. No, we're not. We're leaving it in. All right, say it again.
It's Putin Nanny.
There you go. All right, I'm good now.
There we go.
It took a while to get there, but I wasn't letting go of it.
Right. Cheap Cobra junk.
That's if I can't hit anything, I should have spent that money on a hiss tank. Where's Eddie when you need him?
Exactly. When speaking of hiss tanks and cheap Cobra junk, this is actually a very comic book thing. You know, we know G.I. Joe from the toy aisle and from the television series, but if I'm not entirely mistaken, their Soviet analog, the October Guard, made their premiere in a G.I. Joe special.
Yes.
It was illustrated by none other than Michael Golden.
I believe you are correct, sir. I believe you are correct. And that, you know, and what's really interesting, and that brings me to a point that I really wanted to make. Was, and also we should probably start the show at some point.
Welcome to Red Square, Hollywood Red Squares.
Hollywood Red Squares! Yakov Smirnoff is Center Square.
Solid.
But no, the idea that, and you saw it with your favorite Russian supergroup, the Soviet super soldiers, was this idea that on either side you had these kind of puppeteers guiding you to, you know, guiding these two groups to fight, and these two groups find respect and common ground inevitably and realize the other side ain't so bad. You know, them commies ain't so bad. Like when the Avengers would fight the Soviet super soldiers, or when G.I. Joe would have to team up with the October Guard, you know, you had that initial, you know, first issue of beating each other up. And then inevitably they would have to join forces against a common enemy, and they would realize
the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of chestnut there pretty pronto.
And then you have the common respect built between the two, and then the enemy gets beat, and they kind of square off, and they agree to, you know, what was the name of the guy from the Soviet super soldiers, Hammer and Sickle, or
Vanguard,
and Captain America would square off, and their teams would be behind him, and inevitably Captain America would stick out his hand, and Vanguard would shake his hand, and they would, and then they would turn around and walk off to the, you know, either side of the Maginot Line or whatever there is there, and
the Maginot Line,
and they would, that was always really interesting because without comic books. And
You reminded me, speaking of real briefly on the Maginot Line, there was a French national who joined the Muggerville 7 Maginot.
Oh no.
Who would just throw an ineffectual wall up around himself, but it only, you know, this wall would only cover half of him. So inevitably, he was the victim of many a kidney punch. Because his villains would come in and just kind of, you know, smack him in the back of the head or punch him in the kidneys or something. So,
well, I mean, and what's interesting is to speak to that point, at least from where I, you know, from my perspective, was in the late 70s, early 80s, mid 80s, through the 80s, frankly, you had this idea that that if you watch TV, and it wasn't that different, the news cycle took longer. That was the only difference.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point there, but, too.
But ultimately, if you watched them, it was Russians bad, right? Across the board. Yeah. There was no good news out of Russia. There was no friendship. Even though Glasnost was a thing, it was still like it didn't sell papers. You know, it sold papers for the day that Reagan sat down with Gorbachev, and that was about it. But it wasn't until I started reading the comics that you got this idea that maybe Russians weren't all bad. As a kid, as somebody that was just getting into it, you know, that was my introduction to the idea that maybe Russians weren't the worst thing in the world, right?
Exactly.
Sorry, I got on my soapbox for a second.
No, that's all right.
As they say in Luke Cage, I was feeling myself. I've been saying that a lot.
Well, that, and, you know, it's like Elton John's, yes, Elton John, you know, Nikita.
Oh, damn. That was a deep track.
That was a deep track, because there did come a day where guns and gates or whatever no longer held her in. Turns out they weren't that compatible.
That they just didn't
work. The one thing they had in common was the Iron Curtain.
Was their hatred for guns and gates.
But once the communism collapsed, it turns out they were just it really didn't work anymore.
That's right. So,
I think that happened with a lot of the Russians. You don't see the Russian heroes, but one of the things, you know, talking about the Soviet super soldiers, what was interesting about the way they were couched, because a lot of times your commie is presented as the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
the abomination. The Gremlin, who just always, it was like, okay, yes, you have a character called the Gremlin. Of course he's a Russian agent.
Well, because
inevitably, if you got a Gremlin, he must be from Kremlin.
Damn it. But inevitably, three-fourths of Iron Man's rogues gallery had to be Russian. Yes.
Well, it's like, you know, you had Titanium Man, who got to have a bit of a kind of independence, if you will, because they either ran out of red paint, because, you know, Crimson Dynamo.
It's all 35 of them.
Yeah, it can't be Red Iron Man or whatever. It's Crimson Dynamo. But, you know, their Iron Man has to be invoke something red.
Right.
Where at least Titanium Man, apparently all they had left was green by the time they got around to painting his arm.
Well, it had to be very, very Spartan. The suit didn't have a lot going on. Like, it was just very, like, blocky, you know, Eastern blocky.
Well, also they pointed out, you have to understand, comrade, Titanium does not take red paint well.
That's not the finish. The finish just off the red paint.
Trust me, it would not look good. Do you want to send a bad? Do you want a superhero, or do you want bad-looking, chippy red paint?
I now have my one-word Russian accent. Pint. The paint is the only word I can say. Pint.
You want chippy bad red pint?
Do you want a bad red pint? Pint job? Do you want a pint job on your fancy titanium suit? Red pint. I always fall in Jamaican. Why do I always go Jamaican?
What is that? It just went straight to the tropics.
I can't help it. Again, I'm on island time. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, Cole. Here, a little known fact about Russia.
I think it was actually.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere all the time except Russia. It's never 5 o'clock in Russia. Yeah,
never. But you were just buffeting, basically.
I was buffeting. I was. Buffering. Can we call that Jimmy buffering? Sorry, I was Jimmy buffering.
That's right.
That's the term. Yeah. By the way, I gotta say this. One of Cole's and I've stared at this for an hour. I'm going through all of Cole's brilliantly put together just a tome, a grimoire of Cold War Russian research, and I come across one, and I don't even dawn on. I just open all these tabs, and one of them is, damn it, the Russian Women Blog .HotRussianBrides.com, and it's.
I open that one up at work. I'm like, oh, got to scroll down to the top of this thing.
I mean, they're really great. It's a really great article with characters like KG Beast, which is amazing, and the Baroness, which is an absolute real Russian villain from the comic books, and the October Guard, Winter Soldier, you know.
And I love the fact that the HotRussianBrides.com website logo is two rings, you know, interlocked,
yes,
that are both shades of red.
And I also love the fact that towards the bottom, and I'm loath to admit this, but I didn't realize upon the first three readings of the article that it was from HotRussianBrides.com until, like, I finally got down to towards the bottom, and I look off to the right, and there is a Hot Russian Brides podcast.
Yes, indeed. The HRB podcast.
Do you think we can get Hot Russian Brides podcast on the Jedi Cole Network?
We need to do a crossover show sometime.
I think we need to talk to them about that.
That's right.
But yes, anyways, I had to digress there. But the one that really struck me on there was KG Beast.
Well, one thing that strikes me, and I reopened this one up here real quick, is at the bottom, related posts. 100 things to know about Russian women, international dating, and hot Russian brides. How is that related to the article of top 5 Russian supervillains?
I don't know, but KG Beast made the list, so I'm okay with anything that they do. Because there is some nerd-ass nerd in the hot Russian brides, you know, headquarters, that was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to write an article on the top 10 Russian villains from comic books. I don't give a shit. I'm going to do it. I'm going to hope nobody notices. Somebody walked in and was like, what the shit is this? No, but
well, the KG Beast is an important one to bring up, because if you look at any lists, and I found one of the research, part of the research, was a tremendous list of from Comic Book Religion, of all places.
I love that
website. It's amazing where you can find the stuff you're looking for when you're doing some research. But the apparently Religion of Comic Book Characters, listed by religious group, Communist.
Well,
is a religious group. But I love the fact that they have a thermometer-type scale.
Of communism!
Of just how commie are you.
Right, like the unicorn, only two commie. Only two pez worth of commie. Whereas, I did not know that Kilowog was a level 4 communist.
I did not realize that. I thought he's sort of red and green at the same time.
Right, level 4. Fidel Castro, though, full-blown communism.
He's like got the full Fidel Castro Pez dispenser. Full.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Castro's the bar, right?
Catherine said the scale is red to dead.
Red to dead.
So depending on where you want to fall. Yeah, it's like the Bad Samaritan.
Oh, my God, yes, the Bad Samaritan.
It was actually a character known as the Bad Samaritan, who was brought to us from the outs. Oh, no surprise there. It was during the Mike W. Barr, Jim Aparo, Alan Davis years of the Outsiders.
Oh, my God,
yeah.
They
brought us such characters as the ubiquitous Duke of Oil.
Oh.
But oddly enough, the Bad Samaritan only let one Pez.
One Pez?
He was a one-pez commie.
He was passing communist.
Green Arrow, Oliver Queen, is a three-pez liberal Marxist, apparently.
Jeez! That's so great. It's funny that we have talked about this website no less than 3 times, and we keep being completely surprised by this website. I'm going to go ahead and bookmark this website into the echelons of our research, so that we never forget it again, because it pays off so well in every aspect that we've ever needed it to. So yeah, this website's brilliant. It breaks down everything from just, oh my God, it's so good. But
one of the things that strikes me is, if you look over the body of any lists of these type of, you know, your communist characters, your Russian characters, most of them are coming to us from Marvel Comics.
Oh, sure.
Marvel embraced the Cold War wholeheartedly, because one thing Marvel did a lot of was to embrace the hell out of trends. They, you know, the Kung Fu trend brought us Iron Fist and Master of Kung Fu, of course. And the Blaxploitation brought us Luke Cage and a lot of other characters. I think Black Panther even emerges from that. And so it's not at all surprising, but KG Beast is an important one to bring up for two reasons. Number one, it is a DC character.
Right.
Who not only fought Batman, but then got Cask of Amontillado'd for it.
That's the one we talked about in Batman. In the Don't Mess with the Batmans, where he walled him up and left. Cut his arm off.
And you get walled up.
You get your arm cut off, and then you get walled up. That's
not just with acne bricks, bat bricks.
Right. Special bricks that he had to have made in 17 different places so they couldn't be tracked back to Wayne Enterprises.
In fat cement.
That's right.
You do not mess with the Batman.
And he had Alfred do it as an insult.
But the other reason he's important to mention is because he's a cagey beast.
I mean, how on the nose.
He's a cagey beast.
How on the nose. Plus, he was in Batman versus Superman, so there's that.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. But also, and then he got replaced by, much like the KGB was reordered and renamed, he was replaced by the NKV Demon.
Damn it. I don't know if that's true or not. That's the problem.
I could say I set up. I know that sounds like the kind of BS where I would play off of, well, you know, the KGB was replaced by the NKVD, but which is a nasty, nasty, it's like red herpes.
Okay, wait a second. Muggerville 7, the enemy of steel wool is red herpes. Can we go on record right now?
The enemy of steel wool is red herpes.
Thank you. It's like the Crimson Dynamo, but
steel wool very well.
But you literally can't get rid of it. That's the thing.
It's like the embodiment of the worst parts of the Red Scare was how you just once your communist gets their hooks into things, it's impossible to excise.
We need to move on at some point.
Honestly, the NKV Demon was an actual
character
from DC.
I'm not okay with that.
I know. And in further news, Cosmo was created in 2008, appeared in Nova.
That's fantastic.
So, yes, it's got a little bit of a pedigree, no pun intended.
At some point here, okay, so we're about 40-odd minutes into this podcast.
This was not near enough time.
No, it wasn't, but we need to move on to China.
Yes, indeed. It was important when I was doing the research because I got to think, you know, there's a surfeit of Russian and Soviet characters. I don't want to forget about the fact that communism did get a solid foothold elsewhere. So we can't just simply do red all over without going all over looking for our red characters. And by far the most prominent, I'm sure you know well.
Who's that, Cole?
Oh, I was sort of letting you.
Oh well, I wanted to talk about the Great Ten. Favorite.
Prior to that, yeah, the Great Ten is where DC actually kind of trumps Marvel on in volume of red Chinese characters.
But you want to talk about Collective Man, don't you?
I want to talk about Collective
Please
Man.
Please go right ahead, sir. It's my favorite.
There were two pivotal events in Marvel Comics.
Red Madrox.
Two pivotal events that increased the volume, the international scale of their character base.
Oh my God! Okay, here we
one
go.
One was giant size X-Men #1,
right?
/ X-Men #94,
right?
Because the X that brought in a corral of mostly new characters from all over the world, including Pyotr Rasputin, Colossus / Proletarian. With his wee little tribute to Lenin. The other one that it brought about, the other event that increased the international scale with mostly new international characters, was the Contest of Champions. That brought us the luck-spewing Shamrock.
Awful characters. Awful characters.
Superhero of Ireland, apparently, at that period in Irish-English history. That's probably the only superhero they were allowed to have. The damn interlopers from the UK, from England.
They just kept taking them all and putting them on their own teams.
Exactly.
Except for Banshee, who got out.
Yeah, Banshee did get out. So, you know, Banshee, I guess there were two heroes. Banshee went off and joined the damn X-Men, and all were stuck with Lucky Girl. Thanks a lot, Xavier.
Only to be overshadowed by Longshot later. Like,
yeah, you couldn't take her mutant ass with you, could you?
Can you give a lady a break?
Yeah, really? What a jerk. Oh, I'm sorry, Cerebro didn't find her. Oh, bullshit. So, like, from now on, he'll have Professor X will have Patrick Stewart voice for me.
We're the future, not Lady Lucky Shamrock face.
Not Lady Luck.
Damn it.
Was what her name would be when they imported her. So she's like, no, I'll stay here and be Shamrock. But they had the first Chinese superhero ever, Collective Man, who, in the course of the Contest of Champions, invoked his power, even though, if memory serves, they all got sucked away to some other planet.
Yeah, it'd be really hard to be Collective Man on in a different dimension.
He was to draw his energy from the collective...
The communist collective, right? Like, that was the idea.
The strength of the entire nation, all Chinese nationals. I don't know if expats would count. Perhaps they do. Maybe, you know, if you're born in China, you're automatically part of Collective Man.
Is there a geofence?
Power base.
Is there a geofence around the area of which Collective Man... Somebody needs to... I need Alan Moore to look into this. Alan Moore, if you're listening, can you reinvent Collective Man?
Serious modern exploration, the Collective Man. But, you know, at one point he draws upon the combined power of all of the Chinese people to... do amazing feats of strength or something. I don't even. It was such a forgettable book. I don't know why I mentioned him. However, I do want to point out that Andrew created one of the most brilliant characters ever many years ago.
Oh no!
Back in USG days, none other than Poseidon.
Oh God.
My favorite comic book character ever, who has the collective powers of the cast of the Poseidon
I forgot about that! Damn it!
And all I could think of was, what a brilliant take on the concept, even if unintentional, the concept of Collective Man.
Oh my god, dude, I forgot about Poseidon!
Powers and Shelley Winter's powers, and all the, you know, everybody in the cast bringing their whatever strengths and skills they could...
And it
actually prompted me to come up with his arch nemesis Inferno.
Right, right, exactly.
Collective powers of the cast of the Towering Inferno.
It's so good, it's so good.
And of course, I immediately designed the chess symbol for the costume for Poseidon was basically the wavy waterline.
Yeah,
with an upside down cruise ship.
Right. I forgot about that wholeheartedly until just now.
That wonderful.
Oh, that's
Buddy McDowell powers. The list goes on.
Shelley Winter's trying to get her fat ass through a porthole powers. Sorry, I was channeling my dad for a second. I'm okay now.
Now let's talk about a group that really ought to be talked about.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Do you know why it's so good? Because I can tell you why. Because I'm gonna perform digital fellatio again on Grant Morrison, because Grant Morrison created this group, and this group is called the Great Ten. And if you haven't checked out, it was the only good thing that I can think of that was born out of the 52 miniseries. If you remember,
I think you may be right there. That may well have been the sole really well. It was sort of the one gem among the stones.
It's a very Grant Morrison concept where it's almost that self-serving, self-pandering, but ends up being kind of brilliant in its own way, where you have these characters like the accomplished perfect physician and August Jen.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, everybody had like these show dog names.
But the show dog names were taken from Chinese mythology for real. Like, and then they were given, you know, breathed life into, and the origin stories were pretty damn brilliant for a lot of these characters. And you got characters that went on. August General and Iron went on to be in a couple of the iterations of the Justice League. The ideas were very, very cool, but they were, you know, they were stationed in the Great Wall complex, and a cool conceit to what we're talking about today is no battlefield decisions could be made, so they weren't allowed to make a decision until the committee approved it. So they all had these, you know, they were allowed to enter battle, but nobody was allowed to make any, you know, decisions, battlefield decisions, until it was approved by committee. So
they basically were in a constant state of hand tying.
Right, right. Which I think was a functionary idea. And they were also weren't allowed to be called heroes. They had to be called functionaries because the communist China looked down on the idea of a hero. So they were functionaries. Like it was very cool. There were a lot of great ideas behind it where, you know, and also the character of the accomplished perfect physician he appeared, at least in namesake, in the Arrow TV show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was the guy that helped Ollie Queen when, you know, in the Longbow Hunter conceit flashback stories. He was the guy that helped him off of the island, essentially. It mined a lot of DC's mythology to create these, as well as a lot of Chinese mythology. So it was a very cool. If you haven't read it, they have their own kind of 10-issue comic book that was very, very cool and has a lot of kind of really where the old Chinese gods come back to kind of lay claim to China, and the Great Ten have to do battle with them. It's very, you know, kind of like the Iron Fist stories that we were, you know, the Matt Fraction Iron Fist with the immortal weapons type of ideas involved. I strongly suggest reading it. It's some of Grant Morrison's kind of more mainstream work, but it rings true. So if you get a chance, read it. That's my thing there. But
well, I love the one of my favorite characters in by name anyway is Shaolin Robot.
The cool, do you know the conceit for Shaolin Robot is pretty amazing.
Yes, indeed. I was reading about the characters, and I also love the idea of seven deadly brothers.
Yes, yes.
The guy that can split himself into seven clones, each a master of one of the seven schools of kung fu.
And a lot of them are...
Take that, octopus style.
And a lot of them are Justice League kind of binaries, where you have the Ghost Fox Killer, which is sort of the Batman of the group. You have the Celestial Archer. Of course they're weirder, but the Shaolin Robot's one of my favorites, where you had this weird, the first emperor of China had a guy create a bunch of autonomous robots that then he didn't want anybody else when he died to emulate what he had completed, so he buried all the robots and the creator in his tomb, and before the death of the creator he managed to somehow inject his ancient AI into one of the robots. Like that, such a cool idea. Thundermind is a Shazam binary.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, where you've got this idea that there's this history teacher, and once every, I think it's like, there's a trigger phase or a trigger phrase that when you say it, you become Thundermind, and you unlock your full human potential and basically become the Bodhi Vista with like any, you can achieve any superhuman power that were in his scrolls. Like you can just call upon them and use them. So there were a lot of really cool analogs there that I was pretty happy about. Like this, it's a pretty cool idea. There was also the Yeti, which is
Eddie would like that. Eddie's Yeti,
which is sort of the kind of Robert Langston Sasquatch narrative there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean it's very cool. So we need to start thinking about wrapping this up at some point.
Yes, indeed, because I you know, there were so many characters that we could have just touched upon, but I think we hit most of the bigger notes that we were looking to hit. And let's see here, because I mainly wanted to talk about the ideas of like the Soviet super soldiers. Was it the People's Protectorate?
Yes.
Another of the kind of predicting of the fate of the Cold War in a sense, without ever realizing they were doing it, I think, is Black Widow.
Yeah, for sure.
Because she, you know, ultimately defects to the West. And I think one of the Red Ghost Monkeys, I think the baboon actually defected as well.
Did he? Really,
but it, yeah, huge disadvantage there. And then you had I'm not familiar that much with one of the last holdouts of just deep cut Red Scare, Cold War, Red Till You're Dead Russian character was Omega Red.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
I think falls into this somebody tell him range.
Right? That's...
You know, I think he was like the Russian who didn't know. I think even Winter Soldier knew the Cold War was over. And Omega Red's still out there just plugging away. Like, probably thought Gorbachev sent him. Was like, we're like 10 guys out now. You know, I don't think you realize.
Oh my God! No, you're absolutely correct. Yeah,
most of them got the old Russian head cold. If you, which is basically a pistol shot.
Right, right. They call that hot tea.
That's right.
I don't know what that means, but I think that's what they're called. Oh my God! All right, I think we should wrap this up. We've been
yes, we do. But Catherine actually came to our rescue with you remember our good friend? God damn it! You remember our good old Putin-Annie?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Catherine hands me some notes here.
Oh no, Catherine's making notes off camera.
Okay, off camera. Here we have for your Soviet pleasure, Putin on the Ritz.
Oh, world star!
Oh, but wait. Fig Putin!
No!
You're getting the Putin horn here.
You're getting the Putin horn.
And now, I had to do these in the reverse order she wrote them because they actually just get better.
Okay.
This is the one. This is the one that sells the whole concept. This is the one that is going to get it. So it'd be like Captain America. Darn Putin!
No! World star! Thank you, Catherine. I give you an honorary Putin horn.
Here's an honorary Putin horn.
Oh, God. Okay. On that note, I don't think we could wrap it up any better than that.
I don't think so. Well, you're darn Putin about
you're darn
that.
Putin about that! Oh, why don't you plug us up and we'll get out of here? Because
we're Putin this one to bed.
Oh my dear God! Because it's in Soviet Russia podcast plug you.
That's quite literally.
I couldn't get out without a Yakov Smirnoff joke. It had to happen.
So put away your borscht and vodka. We're gonna say goodbye to our red friends. And,
that's my favorite. That's my favorite like up jump blues song. Put away your borscht and vodka.
That's right. It's kind of a romantic song.
It is, unfortunately.
It's like the Russian version of Nikita. But this is Hey Kids Comics coming to you from the JediColdUniverse.com unist. Wow.
That's awful.
Yeah, this is where we lose our giant Russian and Ukrainian audience right here.
And unfortunately, we actually have a giant Russian and Ukrainian audience.
What's weird is the damn JCU has a massive following in Russia and Ukraine.
It's Glasnost. Don't forget Glasnost, guys. We love you. Blue Jeans, right. David Hasselhoff. What? Come on.
That's right. I can't remember the damn actor's name. Watch the movie Gotcha. That'll, that'll put you right in the middle of the period right there. And apologies to Rocket Red number 7.
Oh, you're out there. Much love.
We really miss you there. And we missed talking about the Rocket Reds. But with that, this has been another fine production of the Jedi Cold Universe, JediCold.com. You can write to us. JCUmail@yahoo.com. You can check out the occasional tweet at the Jedi Cole U. The Jedi Cole YouTube page has an uncut, wildly unprofessional video of Eddie and myself at the part of our Rogue One coverage for the Rogue One release at midnight, where I'm trying to master where the hell the camera is located on the, the tablet that Andy had given me. See how poorly I operate that tablet. Sad. You can find out about conventions in the Lone Star State at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. And be sure and check out a week from this coming Sunday, if you're listening to this when it first airs on October 7th, a week from October 9, which I guess would be, what, October 16, Eddie Medina and I will be broadcasting our very first episode of the Rancor Pit Live from the brand new Vocal Media Studios in Dallas, Texas, in the CBS radio building, in a studio where Russ Martin once produced
his
show.
That's amazing.
And this is our sixth studio in the over 2 years we've been doing this show. And I've seen some pictures, and it is a beautiful, it's a beautiful thing to watch, Andy.
Oh, don't get croup. We all float down here, Cole.
Yes, indeed.
Also, if you're listening, and I'm reaching.
And that's going to be at watchonairlive.com.
Damn it. You can't. Okay, good. Here's the thing, right? Like, if you're a member of this weird clown army that's amassing, just stop. Lay down your arms. Let's put in a nonviolent end to this. I don't. Are you guys in Texas? Are you guys familiar now with all the clown stuff that's happening?
There's a lot of that going on. I don't think it's as prevalent here due to open carry.
Right, right.
They did a piece on the news the other night, and they compared the one that's so popular now, the AR-54 or whatever.
Yes.
Put that head-to-head with a Spritzer.
Doesn't hold up.
No, it does not.
So, yeah, stop with the clown stuff. And in closing, one thing I do want to say about, as we're walking away here into the sunset, the one thing I do want to say about Rocket Red is, how untenable do you think it is to wear a super suit with a beard? I think he's the only one.
Yeah, I think
it gets musky.
Much is. Yeah,
it has to get musky in there, right?
But that's what the Russian women, they like the musky.
Damn it. All right. Say goodnight, Cole.
Musk invented in Russia. We have abundance of musk.
I'm hanging up now. Goodbye, everybody.
We have musk ox. We have musk flavor. We have musk air freshener for car.